Welcome to the next segment of the Mile High Subluxation Science Summit. We are grateful to have you aboard. And this has been an incredible day with incredible people sharing. And I'm going to welcome to this segment a man that almost needs no introduction in the chiropractic world, which is Dr. Donnie Epstein. And he has done incredible science and research and chiropractic, and really branching out to areas of neuroscience that are compelling throughout the world. So he's known for development of Network Spinal, for his Epi Energetics organization, and also for some, as I said, most compelling science and research that existed in chiropractic, his book, The 12 Stages of Healing, and his book, Healing Myths and Healing Magic. And so welcome to the Subluxation Science Summit, Dr. Donnie Epstein.
Thanks. And Danny, thank you. You know, I remember a bunch of years ago for the first Subluxation Conference at Sherman. I had conversations at that time at school, I think it was Ralph Boone may have been there at the time, and I said that it's time that if schools are subluxation centered or based, if that's the clinical intervention that's done, it's about time that people actually have an academic course on that. And that's where the subluxation conference Sherman has taken off, really started from. And I'm really more than excited that indeed you're engaging the largest group of chiropractors in history and taking a look at subluxation science. It's about time.
Yes, and as I said, this is the largest online summit, to my knowledge, on subluxation science in the history of the profession. And so what we've done all day is, as we know, that there are those in the profession that want to move a profession away from subluxation and adjustment. And we want to have people have knowledge, references about how much evidence and research there is relative to spinal and neural integrity. And you've done some of the most compelling research and information relative to chiropractic care. And this is a great opportunity for people to be aware of that. So let's start with one of those areas, which is quoted so often in chiropractic, which is the quality of life study. It's the largest study in the history of chiropractic to this date relative to quality of life. Can you say anything about that and why that is important?
Well, about 25, the study was done in 1994, data was collected, 95. The first publication was in the Journal of Internal Subluxation Research in 97. Actually, when we published that, a lot of the and started sending their copies to different chiropractic boards, excited about it, state boards started going after us and said, well, since you're doing research, it must be experimental. Okay. And then later on, it was not accepted by different places in the profession because it was the JBSR at the time, which was peer-reviewed. We had further studies done years later, 2004, in the Journal of Alternative Comprehensive Medicine, which is an international peer-reviewed journal, a very respected journal. And the reason why is, well, what motivated is that as articles on network chiropractic was called at the time were coming out in different publications, LA Times, Lent Constitution, Daily Mail, Toronto Star, many other publications, magazines, Shape Fitness, even the Journal of Veterinary Medicine, veterinarians are using showing changes are coming about. It includes behavioral changes, social sciences may help people quality of life change. It included things that were outside the conventional biomedical model alone. And part of my idea was based upon the principles of chiropractic, that if chiropractic worked, chiropractic shaped a better world tomorrow, what would a better world tomorrow look like? And in practice, the changes I got most excited about of all was when somebody had a new perspective on life, a new perspective on healing, because unless it's a change in meaning of your body or your life, there really is no healing. It's just restoration to where you were before. And people got excited, expected getting chiropractic care. They didn't expect, they expected a symptom or disease to be reduced or go away. They didn't expect, oh my God, I'm making healthier choices. Oh my God, I'm adapting stress better. I'm enjoying life more. So I wanted to see actually what changes really we're getting. I really wanted the truth. What really is happening, and not just with me. So we established a retrospective study, and it was the largest one of its type, and first in this area of expanding the model of health and healing, because I figured if we could expand the model of what healing is from just the biomedical model, which is paraclinicals, laboratory, physiological tests, that type of stuff, and x-rays, and symptoms going away, into the social science model, which also included your overall quality of life. It includes your functional capacity. Yeah, the procedure worked, but am I more functional, there? My perceptions about health and well-being, those are all things that we included. And what I call innately guided. And what if innate was really infusing educated mind? Well, a person, what would it be? I said, well, a person should have to listen to their innate cues more effectively. Life should be more would they like it to be. And what they said, well, we can't put this stuff in there. It's spiritual. We won't get published research at the University of California Irvine Department of Neuroanatomy, Biology, and Sociology said, medical school, they said, we won't get published. So they said, well, what could you call it that, rather than spiritual? What's a simple term? It's a life enjoyment. Because ultimately, no matter how you, oh, I'm spiritual, are you enjoying life? If not, you're not spiritual. Because spiritual is no matter what life is, you bring enough resources to it that some light is shown in it. So we called it that. And everyone, different doctors who were even the first early level certification network, would be given on particular days, they'd be given questionnaires to fill out, and it said, how are you doing today as compared to when you started in care? Now, what I told these researchers in 1994 when we set up the study, was that, this may seem crazy, but 20 some odd years from now, people's belief of how they're doing and how they talk to their friends about it, what I call the social network, is going to be a bigger predictor for what they do. And I believe that how a person believes they're doing, not how are you, but how do you feel about how you're doing, I believe that's going to be a greater predictor of health there, because the social science model is why people get care. Why do you bring your dog to a vet? The dog's not right. What a kid to a vet, a kid to a pediatrician, not just a fever, but it's something off in the way the person interacts in the world. It's really a state of beingness that's really altered. So we did the studies and results were extraordinary. 76% of 2018 people showed improvements in every one of the categories, physical well-being, less headaches, backaches, neck aches, menstrual cramps, all that stuff. The ability to emotional, mental well-being. Are you worried about big things, little things? Are you depressed? That's a big thing in today's world, really. There. Next one, stress. Stress about work, stress about sickness, stress about being stressed, whatever it is, those type of things. And the last category is life enjoyment. Together, they put together a wellness index, the gestalt of all of it. Now, this is important because people say, I just wanted a vegetarian diet, and I just started exercising, I'm doing yoga, I'm meditating. But nothing was ever done to see overall, how does that really impact their overall, all categories? This was never done. And actually, when we took a look at the numbers, such as a person stopping eating the bad stuff, people eating more healthier stuff, more vitamins or maybe mineral supplements, being more conscious of food they ate, meditation, yoga, doing Tai Chi, more self-promoting things and less smoking and other drugs and less things. Well, what was the result? Well, collectively it had a factor of 0.22 in the wellness scale. But also what that means, just get the number, 0.22. Well, when they added network care to it, the actual change was 0.4, double that. So what does this mean? And they wouldn't, people were not coaching people on what to eat. They weren't doing therapy. They were getting the chiropractic care and the changes that chiropractic historically talked about philosophically, anecdotally, were happening. But this is it. If you stop doing all the bad stuff and all the good stuff in relative terms, the care doubled it over all those things. Now the reality is, well, I got a new diet, I have a new supplement. Yeah, but after a few months, you may have to be more strict on the diet, do more workout, because after a while it plateaus. And there's only so many hours you can be controlling your life to be focused on what it makes you to be healthy. You know, trying to be healthy can make you sick.
Right.
Getting living life. But this is the big one. Relative to the path of care and improved quality of life overall, the gestalt, biomedical and social science, their indicators, how they're doing, of 0.22, the ability of people to constructively make healthy choices fed back on itself a 0.6. So we have something revolutionary. Not does it promote health and well-being, but help promote healthier choices feeds back on itself. Because I said in the early 1990s, mid-1990s, I said that ultimately what will eventually lead the healthcare industry is not the procedures done, but eventually is how is it making people well. Now, this is it. But the study also showed that if a person, there seemed to be very little relationship between a person's symptoms, presence or absence, and the wellness index. So a person can have symptoms and be well, person's symptoms be ill. That's really interesting because symptoms happen when you're getting sick and when you're well. It's a means of adaptive change. You need more energy. This is really, really powerful. So this set the standard for something. I also figured that if politics continued the way it was still doing, going, you know, you might have difficulty making health claims. But if the people said, these are the results we have, I'm getting this change, they can't stop a person's personal religious perspective or freedom of speech speaking about that. And it's time you start going about that, because what people care now about is how well you think you're doing. And we have an index for that. So that was really groundbreaking. And from what I understand, there's still been no study that I know of in the healing area or health area that has shown this type of study with the size population.
Yes, there's a couple of key things about this that I want to highlight. Number one, to my knowledge, there has not been another study in chiropractic or another healing art of that magnitude. And the chiropractic ones that have been smaller population based did not show as good changes in their quality of life. So that's also a key thing. And the third thing that I want to mention that's vital that highlight and then talk about another research study is this, that you did something very important after that, which is that what you did is the purpose of science. So often people do science projects, research areas to try to prove what they do.
Yeah, that's not science. That's power.
Right, that's not science. Versus that you actually, from the information, then change some of your protocol to say, well, this is the best results we've gotten, but can we get better results based on the information that we have?
Yeah, that's really great. So I took what was network, and one of the things I looked at is, in network, people know you have a wave. You know, people say, don't make waves. I make waves, okay? the wave flow into network is a unique phenomenon. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a moment. What we found is that what was the greatest predictor of a long quality of life? Now, when people had trauma, such as rape, different abuse, and really pretty severe things, they actually got better results. You'd think, well, it'd be worse results. But obviously, these people knew they were wounded, okay? It's a different thing. There's a challenge there. There's an amount of energy bound up in the system, ready to be liberated. So we found that the greatest predictor of all of the change was a person was aware of what was going on in the body. So they were aware of it. So somebody could have a wave going through the body, and if they were not aware of it, their quality of life did not improve. Then there's two waves, the respiratory wave, which is a new process, unique in our areas, not just breathing, but every vertebra of the spine moves. So the afferents start changing the signal to the brain. And the difference, what I'm saying is what B.J. Palmer said, I think the major effect is afferent, not efferent part of the cycle. So the body is receiving poor information, therefore its response is consistent with that.
Garbage in, garbage out.
That's right. So what we're looking at here is now, they found that if a person had a breathing wave where every vertebra starts rocking, you see it move up, it's called a respiratory wave, which kind of resets some of the afferents that way. When that happened, a person really got greater results. If they had the respiratory wave before the network wave and were aware of it, the quality of life was the highest. And if they got both earlier in care, they generally stayed in care. And one of the results this study showed is that you had a 99% patient satisfaction, which is a very big thing, and 95% of the people wanted to continue with care. And after 3 years of the study, the quality of life did not stop. There was no ceiling. It kept going up and up and up. So, for example, if you were in care and you said, how was your life before? And you said, well, my life was pretty good before on a scale, say 1 to 5, but the hypothetical scale, or my life was a 4. A year later in care, you would say that was a 2. You downgraded where you were before because your standard increased. This is unheard of. Which is really extraordinary. So based upon that, I said, why? And everything we've done in research has constantly changed the clinical protocol. And now we have a network, network 2.0 is network spinal analysis. I'll mention that and what led to that. And then new research led to network spinal, a third one. You know, there'll be a network 4050 because as human physiology able to adapt in the world different, as human consciousness is shifting, we're going to be the leading edge of what's going to be possible between a person's experience of the world and the way they adapt in the world and they contribute.
Exactly. And that's how it should be with everything in science and research, is that new information leads for new strategies. And this is a good point before you go into the next research study to mention the work that's being done by the EpiEnergetics Foundation. So people can learn more about that. Yes. The EpiEnergeticsFoundation.org. I think I got the URL correct. Because what we're highlighting is this, through this summit, the organizations, the institutions that we'd like people to plug into and to support. So the research that Dr. Epstein has led, that's intriguing, you want to support that, support the foundation. Just like we say, support the foundation for vertebral subluxation that Matthew McCoy's and Dr. Chris Kent have held up. And these are great resources. If you go to the epienergeticsfoundation.org site, there's all these abstracts of research that have been done with network that I would like people to plug into, and so they can be knowledgeable. When you have people that are maybe detractors in an educational institution say, oh, well, there's no research, you can show some of this really compelling information and you're more knowledgeable. And then that actually helps you be more certain in delivering the care in your office. And certainty really then lends to practice success. Ultimately, the most important thing, practice member success. Another area.
Well, I just want to make a note. I'm the one who coined the term practice member.
Yes. And a lot of times it's misused. People don't use the term correctly with their intent that you intended for. You know, they think of it as they're in a club versus really it was a stage of healing that a person has achieved.
They go from a patient to a practice member. A patient is someone who wants someone to fix them. They want the person to be accountable.
Right.
Restore them to a prior state of practice member. Say, we're going to collaborate. Healing and living a more full life is my responsibility. And I'd like you to be able to assist me, helping my innate capacity for that to happen.
Right. Just because they're in your office doesn't mean they're a practice member. They have to make that shift in their process of the stage of healing that they're participating in. So
my first network seminar I ever gave in 1984, at that area, one of the things I talked about is how if you gave proper subluxation care, effective subluxation care, a person would spontaneously at some point move from a patient to a practice member, because being a patient, once we take care of them, they have a responsibility to be fixed to a prior state, is a sign of illness.
Yes. helping them grow. So now another study, actually it's a series of studies. Let's help people understand this and how important this is. This area that we're going to talk about is something that every chiropractor should be enthused about, no matter what side of the political area you are in chiropractic, which is the central pattern generator. And the network wave is a central pattern generator. This is a new area of neuroscience that really we're going into. Can you help people understand that and what it is?
Well, I'm going to continue with what I said before. Once we found that awareness of the wave was key, I started saying, well, then let me take a look at this research was done. I was not one of the practitioners. We made sure all the practitioners get involved. And so we've got people even relatively new in network who were involved in it, were doing it around the world. So what we, 131 offices, I believe. What happened is I realized that awareness somehow became a key. That's when I started adding somatorespiratory integration, another area where you become aware of the body and breath, because that actually improves things. And just so you know, part of body awareness is looking into the parasympathetic systems. While a chiropractic, you look at dropping sympathetic tone, parasympathetic has to also come up also. So that, and I started changing the care into what's called network spinal analysis, is what I taught for most of the years after that. And 95, I made the shift, because I realized that what did the average patient get in change? The average person had some physical symptom changes, and they had some emotional, mental changes at a certain point. A little bit later, many started noticing that they were adapting to stress more effectively. That's generally when the waves started coming through, had a major stress-busting effect at that particular point in time, assuming the respiratory wave was also there. Then we went further, they got the bigger quality of life changes and made healthier choices. So I looked at when was the average person getting what type of change, and I said, let me include in the protocol the person's self-reported changes that the average practitioner was getting with the average practice member at that time, or patient at that time in care. And I said, let me now find a way of modifying the care to produce a sensory motor association of the body's awareness and self-regulation of the subluxation pattern. Even the nose subluxation, the energetics that were associated with it, a loss of coherence, a loss of beingness, and the different factors would happen. And let me do that. And then we started doing that, so we developed network spinal analysis, where consulting with the person on how well they think they're doing and helping them realize that wellness and healing is the biggest circle to begin with, and this is our target long term. So they have a game plan. It's not a few visits, the game plan of this is where we're going to, and we have data to support this. So that was, so the next point then was to say, let me now study what the wave is, because I need to modulate the wave. We'll start as a major large wave movement with people having conscious shifts, not knowing what it was going to be like at all, not knowing what the change was about. And sometimes people's spines improved. And over 30 years of study, it became, this is the most refined level of coherence at a distance the central nervous system ever measured, with factors that are being patented that are actually looking at now modeling how neurons coordinate at a distance, even models for computer models of central nervous system to help people with everything, robotics and surgery. So this we're establishing a whole new area. 14 universities have studied the network wave in departments of neuroanatomy and neurobiology, engineering and mathematics. And people are getting the masses of PhDs studying a new level of coherence of the central nervous system studying the network wave. And people are getting the masses of PhD screens in this besides studying it. So there are schools, it's crazy, the schools that people studying aren't getting care, but they're studying, you know, university.
And this is an important thing. Coherence at a distance and coherence general of the nervous system. Can you help people understand what that means?
Okay. Well, first of all, the way current understanding is coherence means, it's also from a quantum level, quantum entanglement. Two parts of the system responding as one, as one whole system. Where if you, for example, made adjustment or contact with the sacrum, the cervical may respond before the signal even got up there. It's responding there. You have a paraplegic, quadriplegic, the wave goes through, the person's going through the area of the lesion and still a response on the other side. If you and I, or love is an example of coherence, if we're together, I may know what you're feeling or thinking. You may be finishing a sentence with someone who you're in relationship with. That's coherence. It's the highest level of energy efficiency. The bottom line, what a subluxation is associated with, is a lack of coherence. That shows up with the person, it's just my shoulder, it's just this. Their life is separate, it's not one whole unit. They don't think what they're doing, where they're living, they're interacting, is connected, it's all one. So now the largest coherence of the central nervous system, one of our research said before, was about this distance from one part to the other. Now they're finding the sacrum and the brain and the cervicals, this coherence. And now when they're starting to study people on adjacent tables, one person's oscillation of one person's spine, the rocking of the vertebra, is showing up in the other, which is really, really, really extraordinary. So what they found out is the first thing is studying the wave is, what is it? I mean, that's the question. I want to know what it is, because I was willing and still to change any theory, to change any application, anything to match what is really going on. Because you could have results based upon 10% of what you're doing, maybe because 80% of results. I want everything we're doing because it gives results. And this is the thing people have difficulty with me studying with me over the years, because I would say, I know we taught this before, but this is it. But I'm doing it well enough the way it is. I understand, but as new research comes out, we could do better, because humanity does need to upgrade our operating system, and that's what we're talking about. So this is what happens. You have a gait. The way you walk is a gait. And associated with the gait is the most studied central pattern generator of the central nervous system, and it's associated with locomotional movement. So embedded in the spine is a series of circuits, so to speak, that have an algorithm that's unique for each individual, which means it's a human identifier. And there's an algorithm about your gait, how you go. And that algorithm is unique. Only you have that algorithm. When you start studying this, Homeland Security got interested, because obviously if it's identifiers, they want to know. So we know we're onto something here. So what happens is this: if you break your leg or had a stroke and we're walking, obviously we would say it's not you walk, your walk. But if they had your walk, your previous gait, your prior gait in the system, the same people who developed that system, the people working with the research with us, they would say, well, no, this is you. Because there would be past the chaotic change of a fracture or a break or a stroke or some other nature, there would be an unsettling in the system. There would be a reorganization, and all your central nervous system and sensory motor strategies around posture and locomotion would be changed to your innate signature. What has been my holy grail, so to speak, in life is, how does spirit make matter? How do you manifest in life? How do you make a dream happen? How do you, it's help, it's the whole thing, it's the bigger picture. How does you, what's your innate signature of your soul, your essence, that manifests as your life? And I look at all different areas for this, and epigenetics is the energetics behind it. Network is a healthcare. I call epi-healing, beyond ordinary healing, to do that, because it is what healing is about, but not the way people think it is. So looking at this, 2011, the researchers, University of Southern California, Department of Engineering and Mathematics, who were doing a bunch of different papers mathematically, first showing that, hey, there are two types of systems, linear system, which means you do a little thing, you get a little change, you get to a big thing, a big change. Therefore, if a person has cancer, you're not going to give them chiropractic care or herb. But if they have just a small thing, then it's okay. I mean, that's what a bunch of professors trying to do, a linear model. How could a gentle force make such a difference? Because a linear system means you have to do a big change. If it's a big problem, small to a small. It's proportionate. Mm-hmm. Living systems are not linear systems. Mm-hmm. Weird.
And the more adaptable and the more dynamic the linear, the living system is, the less force is to make a change.
Well, that's it. And actually, Danny, that's the perfect thing, because what they used to call chaotic systems, you flap the wing, a butterfly flaps its wings to New York, it changes the weather in Tokyo, it takes 200 years, so it's all interrelated. They changed term chaos, which they say is ignorance of the system, mm-hmm. and the name of it, into dynamical systems, because it's how dynamical, adaptable it is. Right. Again, nervous system we're talking about. So when we look at this, is there are two types of nonlinear chaotic systems. One is random, it just happens, and the other one is called dynamical. It could be determined, it's predictable, but to be predictable, you have to have enough distance looking at it. So you're in an airplane, you say, wow, the pattern on those mountaintops looks like the coronary arteries. It's the same chaotic pattern, the same pattern that played out. So a dynamical system says a small change in the system at the right time, the right place to change the whole system. That is what when I started realizing that, I started saying, I'm gonna further modify my network, say, how can I do the least to get the most? And to do that, I have to no longer be working in the area of highest tension, highest fixation, higher that. I have to go to the area where actually is most adaptable, the area that's most pliable, the area that isn't locked, to get the NHB to adapt more effectively. So with this and the vertebral dura relationships were the most effective places for this. But look at this, in 2011, they noticed something interesting. they were actually looking at someone who's a quadriplegic and the wave going through them, and they said, wow, this looks very similar to the mathematical signature of the human gait. So they actually published papers saying that appeared mathematically that the network waves, I originally called the somatopsychic because its body creates the mind, so to speak, the co-creative, that the network wave itself perhaps should be considered the second known central pattern generator of the spine, of the central nervous system and spine, not associated with locomotion. Several papers were published, in all different journals. And by the way, relationships with spinal central pattern generator and heart rate variability have also been published in international conferences on cardiology. And a patent has been applied for something that looks like a central nervous system variability, which may regulate heart rate variability based upon the mathematics of a network wave. So this is really huge, huge. So what they found now, and other papers, emphatically and mathematically valid, they had developed new math. Get this. In 1997, we started doing this. In 1997 to like 2000, the earlier mathematical studies, new Pentium computers came out. It took 20 minutes of computer processing to do the mathematics of the wave.
Wow.
So this is something that could have never, ever been done before. Now they increased it. I'm also doing systems that beyond chiropractic in the field around the body, and they have to develop better computing powers because the mathematics is beyond what they can do, because the central nervous system processes more information and more different dimensions, actually dimensions. They're looking at 11 dimensions right now simultaneously. And to be coherent is what we're talking about at all different levels. So we found basically, and studies say that network produces coherence, the central nerve coherence at a distance to the central nervous system. And as care progresses to different levels, where I found the mathematical signature of innate intelligence, basically, the sensory motor strategy, and there are different innate intelligences which organize differently, and each way the body moves is associated with different intelligence, with the mathematics of that different organizational intelligence. We can predict that, which is really, it's the mathematics of innate. I mean, that's what we're talking about. It's extraordinary.
And so, that is extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. And here's the thing, often we talk about the thing we want to get rid of no interference, we want to get rid of interference. But I also love looking at this as, well, what do we want to produce by an adjustment? We want to produce coherence, which would be like the opposite of interference, is there's coherence.
And that's the key thing. That's where in the study here, which is really important, I started modifying the force application. So we looked early in care, and we found that at about 4 months of care, more people were dropping out of care, and actually the quality of life started dropping down. It was still much higher in the beginning, but it wasn't having this high trajectory. And I looked at it, and it started becoming more predictable. It became more stable, not enough instability, because you need instability to the next level. And while I was trying to maintain people there and create stability, the nervous system only grows by instability. Instability without enough adaptive energy is called trauma. Instability with energy is a breakthrough, a miracle, something happens. So we're looking to create a temporary instability, because either you have the largest system, you create, if when you go for too much stability, almost all health crises is too much stability in the system. It's adapting the same way no matter what, the same way no matter what. They'll be associated with low heart rate variability, central nervous system variability. And so let's find this adjust supplication, adjust and correct it and maintain it. That's assuming that that's a cause. And I don't believe in cause and effect in the healing arts. It's many contributing factors. Where do you interact in the system for it to self-regulate and grow the only way it knows how to?
And isn't that the essence of chiropractic philosophy?
That's it.
That being said, one more thing I'd like to cover, because I want to squeeze it into this segment with you, which is relative to, it's not relevant just to network, but chiropractic as a whole. There's this movement to take a diminution of the concept of subluxation to a joint fixation, as compared to what's the biggest concept we could have relative to subluxation. And I know we've had conversations and been part of conversations in defining that. And where do you see, where would you comment on that when they want to make subluxation just joint dysfunction versus what it can be?
Okay.
The essence of it.
Well, what you have is you have a political movement, which I believe deals were made basically when the Wilk antitrust suit was won in the 1970s, to move with the cartel of what's happening, chiropractic into part of medicine to get a piece of the pie of the healthcare. And I believe that deal was already made, and Sherman College, things that I've done, other people have done, Matt McCoy's work, Chris Kent's work, Tom Slotty's work, and different work has done, really has upset the political agenda, okay? And I want, it is a political agenda.
It is, it's a political agenda.
Because it's been articulated many years before. I say this, a few things, is that one, for any practitioner, let's ask a real question, what's the highest outcome you would like for your patient based upon care? Let's start with that. What is the highest outcome? Okay. Now, if the outcome is to make them symptom free, then actually chiropractic care may not be always the best case for that, okay? Because symptoms happen when you're ill and they're well. It's not how you're feeling. And if that's the case, there really is no real consistent study that shows any type of manipulative therapy is really effective for that, because they're not adjusting subluxations to a manipulative therapy. There's a movement, and actually the Rubicon schools have actually done that. We were involved in with the Australian Spinal Research Foundation developing a new definition of subluxation, which with Danny, our help, and the team there at help, leading a lot of that with that, got it to be that of a loss of coherence and a loss of beingness and coherence with associated neurological structural biomechanical adaptive type changes, which is a bigger thing. And they really wanted to make it as a joint dysfunction, which most of the schools are around looking at. They don't realize that if it's joint dysfunction with these type of things, the idea then is to make sure only those things that deal with joint dysfunctions are taught, allowed, and whatever it is. And joint dysfunction is the medical operational stuff. Once you joint dysfunction with everything else, everything is about medical therapy to correct joint dysfunction, and then maybe we'll tolerate some other stuff there.
Right.
Okay. So when I take a look at that and say, what's the biggest service we can offer for humanity? You've asked most, and it's for a person to live a life that's more full, more rich. And the central nervous system is part of that. Now, you know, you have to take a look at what's the function of the spine. And there are five gifts of the spine. One gift is function. I mean, between brain and body, it coordinates function. Another one is emotion. The spine is an organ of emotion. The subconscious mind, its emotional reaction is in the spine. The neuropeptides in the posterior, are in the cord, in the actual posterior horn of the cord. It's posterior cord? Yeah, in the sensory motor part of the cord. And what's happening there? That before you even feel something, the neuropeptide has tagged the postsynaptic membrane going to your brain. You don't experience what's going on. You experience how you've emotionally responded. And that's associated with your postural receptors and your body. The third thing is the sense of self. That your sense of self, your identity, who you believe you are, is mediated by sensory motor strategies of the spine. Your ability to make constructive choices requires both descending and ascending messages from the cortex, the emotional system, the body, the viscera, to coordinate a gut response, a knowingness of type of change you have to have. And then spiritually, the spine is an organ of spirituality, from yoga to other things there, kundalini rising. You have spiritual aspects. You have all the spiritual traditions. Every spiritual tradition, at the pinnacle of it, is an experience beyond yourself. Everyone. Well, I think the challenge is these chiropractors have not had a chiropractic enough experience. Once you have a chiropractic enough experience, where you actually experience a self-organizing intelligence, organizing itself, consistent with your nature, coming into coherence with the environment, where you can actually create, rather than trying to restrict your environment, to control it, to meet your reduction in your health capacity, actually add value to the environment in that area, that's a whole different picture. So one, what is the highest goal you'd like? Then if that's going to be, what outcomes do you have to assess for that produce that? Then you're going to have to find most of the methods currently being done by those chiropractors will not achieve those results. So obviously, if that's the way you're practicing and that's what you're taking care of people, you're selecting for a select group of patients probably who don't want to take personal responsibility. You're selecting for people who don't want to have more, probably selecting for people who don't want to see the connection between their emotional, physical stuff. So you're skewing your population and population base away from the people who get the greatest results.
Exactly. And then you also are pigeonholing, and this would be any profession. You could talk about this, anything relative to research. Do it on the biggest scale rather than the smallest area of impact. You know, let's draw as big a picture as possible relative to the ramifications of the integrity of the spine and nervous system on a person's life, and let's study that rather than that's the right area that's smallest.
Yes, yeah, so like one of the things I got a recent call from, they recently, what they found in one of the, and most, and for 20 years of research, before we put in a journal, before it was published in Journal of Alternative Complementary Medicine on the Wave, the central pattern generator, before that happened, be 20 years of research in academic journals of mathematics and engineering. Mm-hmm. To get enough of a basis that by the time it went to a more politicized healthcare journals and that type of thing industry, we had the basis behind it in international conferences all over the place and around the world. But what's really fascinating is they recently found that they found a few years ago, but they published a paper on it because electrical engineering is extremely conservative discipline. At the University of Southern California, for example, their major funding comes from the military industry, and they can't make any claims that will mess up their funding. I mean, just academically right. and financially, right. That's it. So they found that the EKG, or the ECG, as we call it, the heart rhythm, the heart wave, was appearing in one of the channels of a person's electromyograph. So they actually rejected one of the recent papers because they say that's impossible, can't do it. One of the mathematical research, newly PhD, he got his PhD studying the network wave. He's now working in the neurosurgery department of USC with neurology and engineering meet. He developed new mathematics, a new way of seeing it. And in this noise, they thought, with enough distance mathematically, could see a pattern. And they found even 10 years ago in the studies, the EKG signal was showing up in one of the EMG signals. And they said, it's impossible. They just presented the evidence to the team of the top mathematicians in the world who looked at it and said, this is accurate. So the researchers spoke to some people at NIH and said, this is like a very important thing, that a person's heart rhythm shows up in the spinal rhythm. But not always, as care reaches a certain level, as a person gets more coherent, as they make better life choices, as those things happen, as the wave moves from the spine organized more effectively, this happens. This is pretty damn good, so to speak there, good heavenly good. And they said, yeah. We don't know, maybe you want to study this. They said, perhaps this signal, and this is theoretical right now, just to let you know, but this is the things researchers are telling us. Well, Picarpa is talking about joint dysfunction. They say, you know, some of this signal looks remarkably like when a spinal stem cell wakes up. And this is what one of the top heads in NIH said, maybe we should bring some of the people on the team to look at this, because what if this wave was waking up spinal stem cells and entraining the central nervous system and cardiac rhythm as one?
Yes.
It's not chiropractors talking, mathematicians, PhDs of areas say, we should study this.
So then that shows, if there's a possibility of a farther reaching thing than a joint dysfunction, let's study that, right? Let's bring chiropractic to what's the biggest impact in what it shows.
So, and what happens is your outcomes for care have to change to both social science and biomedical. The technique has to change, things right. have to change there. So one more thing, I know the timing is coming to a close for this here. One more exciting thing is that the wave, as it moves through, I thought the wave was carrying information that was disassociated or disconnected, like from the cervical to sacrum or vice versa. And it was taking energy information about your life that's been disconnected with the subluxation, disconnected, and reintegrating it. And what the wave appears to do is suspend the sensory motor patterns associated with something that's not authentic. What does it mean? Because the wave is your authentic sensory motor central nervous signal. That's your fingerprint of your existence. That we know. Okay, there. Now, what happens is when that wave goes through, it appears to suspend the conditioning in the nervous system. That's not you, which is all of our adaptations, all of the stuff that we have, the things that aren't really us. That's my layperson's conversation on what they're speaking about, okay? So, and it takes energy from point A to point B. But the wave goes up the spine, then it starts going back and down a few times when a person rocks. At that time, it moves what's called a standing wave, which moves in one direction through traveling. And if the wave collides one time, it's what's called level one of care. Two, level two, level three. Now, why is this important? They can predict the number of levels of collision of the wave, which is associated with the care we have, with the level of organization of the nervous system, okay? Which is unheard of, it's evolution we're talking about. But this is it. They said that when that standing wave happens, there's no more information being carried from point A to point B. I said, but I was teaching, the wave is carrying information. They said, no. I said, what's going on? They said, what happens at that point is all the energy is bound up in the spine going up and down. And it's not carrying information. What's it doing? He said, that's what happened. When that happens, that's when the vertebrae start oscillating. They start rocking. Two oscillators, level two, level three. We've oscillated this. I said, oh my God. So it is the oscillation, the rock, specific rocking of the vertebra associated with the wave that locks the person into another level. So the wave initially suspends what's not real, but then what gives you sustainability? And I said, oh my God, I have to change the system. So rather than having the wave build up, suspending those, creating more instability, suspending those patterns that don't work, what if we get the rocking in the vertebra to occur earlier? There's less instability. The person goes from point A to B faster. It's a faster session. They could then have a greater change, can integrate things, and you have more sustainability. So we switch that to network spinal, which we're now teaching, which is evolution of all my other systems, but as research shows something different at a higher level that's possible, we're gonna be doing it. You know, and I'm done developing network here. You know, Danny now is in charge of, has the stewardship for where it goes and how it goes, and with other doctors also collectively by the results they're getting. So please, everyone, please start writing case studies and start publishing things. If you find something that's really important, talk to Matt McCoy's group. Find out about where you could publish things about that. If you're interested, if you've done network, doing network, and want to be involved in research, let us know. Because it's not about proving anything. It's about we have an innate fingerprint of a person's innate expression that shows up in the spine. It shows up in care. Now, but I don't get waves. That's okay. What is your objective? Is your objective evolution of the system? Or is your objective rest, correction, and restoration? Depending on what you're doing, they're all okay. But understand, I want to be out there leading the evolution of chiropractic and all the healing arts. And to the degree which chiropractic profession can still withstand the integrity of what it originally was for and how we could do it, we'll be in chiropractic. If not, it has to evolve because, you know, it's simple. What business are you in? If your business is in winter, and economically, you're going to have difficulty. Chiropractic right now should bring in springtime.
Yes.
And to do that, perhaps some people have to, maybe have to be called something different. We will see. But I will serve the principle it's based upon and find ways of making this happen and look for truth rather than political expedience.
And we want to thank you for always stretching the envelope. And that's vital to do with an healing art that's about connection, that's about communication, and that's about growth, as compared to making it more minute and an area that you focus on, area of disconnection.
You know, you gotta look where the culture is moving to. The models that are being used are even culturally not appropriate anymore. The model of chiropractic is and it may sound, I'm not going to stop being politically correct now, okay? that, you know, in chiropractic, many is an immature masculine model of sexuality, harder, faster, deeper. Make sure there's noise. Use more force if you have to do it. It's an offensive model as compared to how can we assist, how can we usher, how can we collaborate with that intelligence that organizes, learn from it, let the person learn from it, and how can the person in chiropractic care learn more about their life by being innately inspired by that? And how can we support it when it's not happening? How do we go slipping and checking and modify what we're doing? And how often do we send to another method of person who uses the same technique or another person? I've gone at times people use different techniques and say, what do you think? Right. I want to find out how could I find standards and that go up a larger circle. Let's expand our circle of participation.
Outstanding. Thank you so much for contributing to this Mile High Subluxation Science Summit. If people want to connect more with Donnie, number one, epienergetics.com is where you can learn about all his healing arts methodologies, including network spinal. And of course, you can see him at Mile High August 15th to 18th. So if you have not registered, you want to do that for sure. Use the code Epstein, www.milehighchiro.org. And also support, learn about the research that has been done. Go to epienergeticsfoundation.org, and you can see the abstracts he's been talking about. We look forward to seeing you at a future event and at Mile High. So again, thank you so much, Dr. Donnie.
Thank you, and Danny, and thank you. And Mile High is the place.
It is.
Love you. Thank you.